Okay, I'm going to present a seminar on signs of God, which I generally present in colleges. I present in colleges and universities just for a change. But Philip Prabhu, I don't know how you'll translate, because you can try, but there's so many words will be coming, so you have to. I don't know how he's going to do. Whatever, yeah. Oh, that's a problem there. Okay, let's start now. Okay, so this seminar is all about signs of God. And I named it because, I'll just tell you why I named it, but before that, let me just forget it, yeah. Okay, so 150 to 200 years back, something happened. And what happened was, East India Company, they came to India, and they did something which was very bad for Indian culture. And we all know about that. People like Max Muller, Thomas Macaulay, and Thomas Macaulay was a British poet, he was a historian, politician. And they tried to change India. They said, we want Indians in blood and color, but English in taste. And that was basically all our Nehru. You know Nehru, Prime Minister? Prime Minister of India, Nehru, Jawaharlal Nehru. He became like that. He was like Indian, but he was like Britisher in all sense. He was influenced. Morris, Winternis, he said, Vyasadeva was a mythical figure, and he said Vedas are primitive, and the author of Vedas were barbarians. This was Max Muller, and Max Muller said Vedas are worse than savage, and India must be conquered again by education, and its religion doomed. That's about these people. Max Muller and Thomas Macaulay and Morris Winternis, this East India Company, they had a mission to destroy Vedic culture, because when these people came into India, they saw at that time, so there's a book written. Do you have a plug point here somewhere nearby? It's far off, huh? Plug point, it's just batteries going down, that's all. Afro, can you bring from my room? Just. What do you need? Yeah, I just want to put here. From my room, can you bring? Yeah, the adapter is there on the. As soon as you open, you see, as soon as you open, on the left side, there's a table small, there's plugged there. Maybe you can just make sure the room is locked. Okay. So, should I start? Okay, I'll speak on. But translation, then, you can do for the time being. Okay, fine. So, these people, when they came to India, it's recorded. So, there's a book, India They Saw. In three volumes by Meenakshi Jain, she is editor, and it's the most authentic book on Indian accounts by Britishers, so it's not just Britishers' take on that, but there are many documents. Like, all Britishers were not bad, Many Britishers, they came to India as majors and they were influenced by culture. Many of them, like Cunningham and all of them, they praised Indian culture. And it is documented there that India was such a place where there were no locks. There were no locks. No doors. Nobody needed doors and locks because it was so safe. People were so cultured. India was a place where nobody spoke lies. They were ready to die for others, martyr. You see the point? So they were like very impressed by India. Thank you. But then the problem was, they wanted to colonize India and they said, well, how to do that? What to do? And British East India Company, they send all these people. And it's not coming there? Okay. Doesn't come, okay. So they said this is a problem, and they noted two things. Education. In India, everybody was educated at that time. Educated not in the sense of literal education, but Vedic education. Like Brahmanas have their education, and so it was their duty to educate rest of the Varnas, to help them understand their duty. That's education. Their personal conduct, social conduct, achar, vyavhar, and they were like pakka everybody. Even in villages, there were no schools at that time, by the way. Because every village had a local education. These Brahmanas were educating people. Many people knew Sanskrit that time, Britishers said. So what was happening? They thought we have to break India before colonizing it. You know, divide and break, you know this, no? Break and divide, that policy. Divide and rule, sorry. So they said, okay, what to do this? So they identified two things. Indian education, it's a backbone. Vedas, this coming from Vedas. And cows. Because cows will make you self-sustained. You don't need anything. If you have one cow, if you have one family and one cow, or maybe two cows max and some land, you don't need anything from society. You can grow your food, you have milk, you have cow dung for fertilizers and everything, and you have some hut you can make from hay and finish. And they said, so they thought, no, to colonize them, we have to make them dependent on us. For them, we have to destroy their education and cows. So, and they, their mission, East India Company sent these people from a mission to destroy Vedic culture, to misinterpret it, to translate it into some orthodox fashion and help us become convinced that this is all barbaric knowledge and a mythology. This is not advanced. That's what they did. Along with that, there was Christianity. And Christian missionaries were there. They wanted to convert people into Christianity. And that's still happening in India in a very big way. And they thought, okay, fine, good. Let's join hands with East India Company. Their mission, our mission is same, almost the same. Like, of course, they want to exploit, but we want to change to Christians. But the way is this. The way to penetrate India is this. You destroy the Vedic culture. They will forget their religion and everything, and then we can change them very easily. So that was the mission, and they were successful. And today in India, nobody believes in Vedas. Nobody believes Vedas. If you ask any common Indian boy, what's Vedas? You know what they will ask you? What is Vedas? Let's go. Which uncle's name is it? That's what they say. They have no idea what's Vedas all about. In ISKCON you come to know, you know, what is Vedas and this and that and that. And because for us in India, we have forgotten Vedas. And if you say Vedas, I'm some crap, you know. We are convinced now. They were successful. We are Indians in body, but British in taste. That's what we have become, British in blood. Okay, so today I'm going to show you how Vedas have all these sciences. All the modern sciences are coming from Vedic knowledge. Modern science, I'm talking about modern science. Every branch of knowledge is coming from Vedas. And that's the topic of this seminar. That's why I called this the science of God. Now, the purpose of this seminar is, especially for preaching, If you go and preach and present this in universities, and they're very much influenced in America, I've done presented this seminar in universities, and people can appreciate, oh, this is Vedic knowledge. And then we say, okay, this Gita and Bhagavatam is a summary of Vedic knowledge, and just take, you know. And even for devotees, all of us, Krishna says, Vedaisa Sarvair Aham Eva Vedyo. I am the summary of Vedas. We should know what is there in Vedas. We are having a Vedic tradition. Somebody asks, what is your Vedas, and we don't know, then what's the point? It's a common fallacy. There's one common fallacy. We think Vedas are concerned with yajñas only, isn't it? We think, okay, Vedas have Karmakanda section. You see this? Karmakanda section, and that's all crap. There's just yajña. And then you have Jnanakanda, Upanishads, that's philosophy. Okay, fine, forget it, we can use something. But then there is Upasanakanda, Bhakti. And that's okay. So we generally tend to put Vedas in a section of Karmakanda. And of course, Prabhupada says, majority of Vedas are dealing with yajñas, isn't it? We know this. But then, there's another take also. Krishna says, all Vedas, I am to be known. Then what do you say? Even my Karmakanda, Krishna is to be known. Now the idea is, this Karmakanda word is an invention of Shankara. There is nothing called Karmakanda in Vedas. Nothing. This Shankara did this small mischief, let's say like that. And he said, initial part of Vedas, Vedas are divided into four parts. You know this, no? There are four Vedas. Rig, Samyaj, Atharva. Rig, Samved, Samved, Yajurved, Atharved. Okay. Each Veda is divided into four sections. So Rig, Ved, Atharva, Yajur and Samved, they have four sections. The four sections are Samhitas, Aranyakas, and then Brahmanas and Upanishads. Are you aware of this, all of you? These four sections, okay. So, what Shankara said, he said, Brahmanas, Samhitas, and Aranyakas, they deal with yajñas. 75% of Vedic knowledge. They deal with yajñas and heaven, and that's pretty much. You do yajña, swaha, ghee, and all this heaven, and there are some prayers for demigods. Just forget it. Leave it. Leave the major chunk of Vedas. Gone. 25% of Vedas, which are Upanishads. He said, okay, this is good, because that's talking about philosophy. That's talking about metaphysics. Metaphysics means God and spirituality, and even without God, and even above God and beyond God, universal consciousness. That's what Shankara said, you know, Mayavad. Okay, that's good. And then after Upanishads, after Vedas, supplement to Vedas are Puranas, isn't it? Puranas. He said Puranas, they are stories, forget it. So another big chunk of our Vedic knowledge is gone. Puranas are also gone. The 18 Puranas, so much knowledge has gone. So Shankara, he held his Mayavad philosophy. We know about Mayavad, okay, God and soul is one. Just by taking authority of 25% of Vedas, Upanishads. He invented this term. For initial part, he invented the term Karmakanda. For Upanishads, he invented the term Jnanakanda. For Bhakti, he invented the term Upasanakanda. He said Karmakanda is useless. Jnanakanda is good. Upasanakanda, Bhaktikanda, that's also useless. That's for less intelligent people who don't know anything. For Mayavadis, we are like foolish people. Dancing, chanting, you don't know anything, so you begin by that. That's okay. For you, Krishna and something, you can't understand anything. But there is no Karmakanda, there is no Jnanakanda, there is no Upasanakanda. Madhva, Ramanuja, they came, they said, this is useless. You can't reject so much portion of Vedas. One says it's nonsense. Krishna says, Vedaisa Sarvair Aham Eva Vedyo. By all Vedas I am to be known. Then what do you do with that? So the idea is, externally if you read that 75% of Vedas, which is Karmakanda, it looks like Karmakanda. It looks like talking about heaven and yajñas externally. You understand? Superficially. If you read externally philosophy of Upanishads, it looks like Jnanakanda, talking about liberation and consciousness. But then, there are various levels of interpretations of Vedas. That's the key there. And if you know the levels, and if you know the interpretations of the verses of Vedas, then you can take out the real knowledge of that. You see? The knowledge is purposefully locked. Because even if Vedas are stolen, people will not be able to access that knowledge. You see, it's locked. There's a lock there. And only people, those interpretations you can only learn from the Guru. If you buy a Vedas, you will not be able to interpret it because you don't have any idea of interpreting it. So that's why I was telling that Vedas can be interpreted into at least 8 levels of interpretation. And so 8 levels of every verse of Vedas. So 8 level of interpretation is, so one is Adidaivik interpretation. Adidaivik means godly interpretation. Then is Adhyatmik interpretation, that is spiritual interpretation. Then is Adi Bhautik interpretation, scientific interpretation. You can get out science. That's what I'm going to show you in this seminar. There's a lot of science in Vedas. And then there is Adi Yajnik interpretation. That means you can understand how to do yajnas, and that's what is there explicitly there. And then there are other 3 more interpretations. This is said, this is all Vedic scholars understand. So Madhvacharya, he has commented on Rig Veda, he has done commentary on Rig Veda, initial 11 suktas or something like this, 21 or 11 suktas, and he showed how to interpret every verse of Vedas in these various levels of interpretation. Madhvacharya, by the way, he was himself a mathematician, he's an acharya, you know, but then he was a mathematician, he was a logician, he was a scientist in his own sense, and he showed how it works. So I'm going to show you what tradition we have. What is our tradition? We are coming from a very rich tradition. And Krishna says Bhagavad Gita is summary of all Vedas. You can imagine how much rich Bhagavad Gita should be. And how much precise it should be. Okay, let me just start here. If you talk about Vedas, there are 64 Kalas. And that's mentioned in Kama Sutra, by the way. Kalas means skills. Skills. Like how to, like for example, how to do, I'll just show you. And then there are 14 Vidyas. 64 skills. Kalas means skills. 64 skills are mentioned that Krishna has, isn't it? Yeah. Krishna and Balaram, they learned the 64 skills in with Sandipini Muni, like dancing, singing, carpentry, and artistry, painting, all these 64 colors. That's in Kama Sutra. Kama Sutra means, Kama means desire. Skills which you can learn and fulfill your material desires. That's the idea. And then you have 14 Vidyas. 14 Vidyas means 14 branches of knowledge, which is mentioned in Manu Smriti. Now what are these? I'll just show you briefly. These are the 14 Vidyas in Sanskrit, which is in Vedas, and these are the modern branches of knowledge which we have now invented or researched, and it is all there in Vedas. You can have a look. Phonetics, science of phonetics is called Shiksha. Science of computers is coming from Vyakarana, Sanskrit Vyakarana, and I'll show you how. Dictionary, science of dictionary is branch Nirukt. Poetry is Chanda. Physics, Jyotish. From Jyotish, physics is coming, by the way. It's not normal Jyotish, I'll show you how. Mimamsa is talking about philosophy. Mathematical laws, what they call, it is coming from Sutra. History is coming from Puranas. Medicine, chemistry and biology, they are coming from Ayurveda. Economics is coming from Arthashastra. And defense is coming from Dhanurveda. These are 14 Vidyas. So one more is missing. I think it just got messed up. So one more is the Gandharved. Gandharved is music. It's not showing. But Gandharved is music. Huh? 12? I think it's just messed it up somewhere. It messed up. I don't know why it's not coming here. Okay. I don't know why it's not coming. Well, Kalp. Yeah, how many are there? 12. 12, no? How can there be 11? Yeah. So Gandharva is 12, and then there is Kalpa. One more, Kalpa science. is below Jyotish. It's there's Kalpa science. Kalp means architecture. Okay, whatever. I'll explain in details, no problem. I'm going in details. You will count it. No problem. 64 kalas, some of them kalas are a beauty parlor. That's coming from Vedas. And that's coming from Vedic knowledge, Shekhar Kriya. Fashion design, which is coming from branch of Vedas, Naipathyam. Carpentry is Takshanam. Tattooing, what you do. But the system of tattooing was different, but it's there in Vedas. It's coming from Samudra Shastra. Of course, they don't used to do tattooing like what we do here, like this. It's a different system. Child care is from Balakridan. Cooking is from Soup Shastram. Magic, Indrajalam. There are some skills I'm showing you. You see, all branches of knowledge are coming from Vedas. Now the question is, how that knowledge was transferred from India to the West? And what happened in India? Like, then how did it get lost in India? That's a question that I'll discuss later in the end. But I want to show you in details what these Vidyas and Kalas are all about. Okay. What's that? Yeah, it's painting, yeah. Like Krishna paints?
But it's Kana or this ornament?
Kana, what's that?
Hena,
okay. Oh, no, with paints.
With
hena. Hena, mehndi, that's called mehndi. It's mostly coming from Islamic world. It's not a really Indian tradition. But it was like paintings, Krishna and Radha, they put dots and like that. So, okay, I'll go in details now. Now mathematics. Mathematics is there in Vedic scriptures. Now, have you heard about this Sulba Sutra? Sulba Sutra, I'll just show you. Sulba Sutra talks about this Pythagoras theorem. Pythagoras came 570 BC. Bodhayan Rishi in Sulba Sutra, which is 800 BC, 300 years before Pythagoras, he talks about Pythagoras theorem. What do you do with this? Then how do you view these mathematicians and scientists as? And they didn't give credit to our Vedic scriptures, you know. They got knowledge from there. But they gave credit to themselves. And this Sulba Sutra, Sulba means rope. In Sanskrit, Sulba means a rope. So previously they used to do mathematics with rope. With a simple rope, you can form figures and you can do mathematics very easily. Even, you can even do calculus. And so I have a friend who is a Nobel Prize winner in mathematics. He has an award. He's a mathematician. So I go and talk to him. And he has done he has done a PhD in calculus. He teaches calculus in 3 days, what we take in 2 years to learn. And I asked, well, how is this possible? He said, because the system of Vedic knowledge was very different. We were not calculating just by numbers and equations. We were calculating by geometry, by ropes. You put a rope, then you put a parallel rope, and then you make the lens, and it was a very simple system. That's called Sulba Sutra. This system was also used to make the sacrifices, buildings, and everything. And this is a part of Kalpa Vedanga. There is a Vedanga, Kalp. Shiksha Kalp Vyakaran Niruk Chand Jyotish. That's how it goes. Kalp means how to make things. Kalpana, that's the word used. Kalp means how to make things. Kalpana means imagination. If you know a little Hindi and like that. And this is coming from Bodhayan. The Sulba Sutra is a part of Bodhayan Sutra. And this Pythagoras theorem is also mentioned in Apasambha Sutra, Mana Sutra, Katayan Sutra, Shashatpat Brahman. It is mentioned in many other Vedic scriptures also, this Pythagoras theorem. It is not his invention that it should be named after him. So this is about Pythagoras theorem. That's the Sanskrit there. Sulba Sutra 3.11. I'll not go into Sanskrit, but just it's there. Just you can see that. This work is done, by the way, John F. Rice School of Mathematics. This work is done in Australia. This is a researched material. It's not coming from me or something. But people have done researches and they have found mathematics is originating from India. It's not a Western science. Okay. This is just about Pythagoras theorem. But then you have this from Rigveda, Prama, Paridhi and Pratima. From Rigveda, the concept of this Paridhi means circumference. You know circle? Circumference. Prama means area. The concept of area, the concept of circumference, the concept of diameter and radius, it's all coming from Rig Veda. The concept of odd numbers, it's coming from Yajur Veda. The concept of powers of tens and zeros, it's coming from Taittiriya Samhita. Without tens and zeros, you can't make computers. You don't know what to do. Decimal system, it's coming from Athar Veda Samhita. Multiplication, Shatpath Brahman. Fractions, it's in Rig Veda. You see, what you call as Karmakand and rejected everything. It's all like that if you know the interpretation system. Infinity, the concept of infinity is from Taittiriya Samhita. The value of pi, it's from Manav Sulva Sutra. This is what is mathematics all about. Everything is there in Vedic knowledge. And more than that, by the way. Linear equations, if you know mathematics, linear equations. Linear equations is coming from Atharveda. Quadratic equations, they are coming from a part of Vedas which are called as Kalpa, which I was talking about. So what do you do with all those things? This is all mathematics all about. Newton didn't invent calculus. We think, isn't it? Newton invented calculus to understand the planetary motions. There was no calculus, but Newton had access to our Vedic knowledge. And I'll show you, I'll show you how he had. But you know what? It's natural, I mean to say, Newton left Cambridge. He was Cambridge, no? You know this, no? He was in Cambridge. And there was a plague, Black Death. You know, Europe was engulfed in that. And so he left that place. And then he went to his village. And then after some years, he suddenly comes up with all kind of knowledge. He just appears with optics, with astronomy, with new kind of mathematics. He can't get things from air. You can't get anything from just nowhere. He had access, Cambridge had access to all these Vedic knowledges. I'll show you how. But then the problem is, he said, I invented it. That's a bad thing. So in a sense, they are like thieves, you know. Let me put it like that. It's not a good idea. Yeah. What is this? You see this verse?
Yeah, I mean this is useless. This Pythagoras theorem is useless.
Why it's useless?
Because it's not useful for any practical reason.
Come on. Without Pythagoras theorem, you can't do architecture.
Oh.
You can't do anything. You can't do anything. There's no application of anything.
Yeah, but something more than that. You have something more.
So, I showed you. But I'm not showing you verses there, how to do it. But I showed you all these things are from Atharva, Taittiriya Samhita. You can go and you can read about them. It's all there. It's all there. Aristotle didn't use calculus.
No,
Newton invented calculus.
No, but he calculated the volume of the sphere.
Calculating volume of sphere, you can also use geometry. Yeah, it was not calculus. Yeah, yeah, you can say calculation.
I read an article long ago.
You can say they used calculation, but not the system of calculus.
Oh, right.
Integration, differentiation. We all know that's Newton said. Okay, I did. So because the problem was planetary motions don't go in circle. Circle you can use geometry,
yeah.
But they go in ellipses. So for that you need integration, differentiation, and especially. Calculus is not just used to measure stationary things. Stationary is okay, but moving things with time, that is calculus. And invented that. There was a time factor in volume. There's no time factor. There's sphere, volume. You can do that. So okay, fine. You can say primitive thing. That's calculation. We don't say calculus. So that's the point there. So these are so many things from Vedic knowledge, and you can see mathematics. Without these values, you can't do mathematics, you can't do anything. And then I'll show you quadratic equations, linear equations, they are all coming from Vedic knowledge. Every person who is doing astronomy, who is reading astrology, every scholar in India who is does course of astrology is not just dealing with predictions, it's dealing with astronomy. Astronomy was a part of astrology. And they all read calculus, they all read all these mathematics from Vedas. They have no idea of modern system. I went and talked to them, the modern system, they said, we can't understand anything, we have not read anything. We don't know about Newton. And they were telling what all Sanskrit shlokas and this and everything is there, very detailed. But problem with them is they can't communicate to modern world because they have no idea what's happening here. They even don't know English because people who do that courses, you know, they're coming from villages and they do that. But everything is there. So you can go to India and there is a college, Lal Bahadur Shastri, LBS. You go there are so many books and so many things, and I can show you, but then we just don't want to go into this, all these maths. But these are the points. Yeah. Okay, and then you have geometry coming from Vedic knowledge. This is Professor A.R. Wallace. He said, we all know this geometry. Geometry must have been known in India long before writings of Surya Siddhant. Surya Siddhant was written in 2000 BC. Surya Siddhant is a book to calculate planetary motions. And Wallace says that Surya Siddhant had rational system of trigonometry. Sine theta, cos theta, that's coming from Vedic knowledge. And this is 2000 years before. Science is just 300 years back. And even before that, Vedic tradition knew geometry. We know all this system. And people who come to India, they do research and they acknowledge that. So mathematics has a Vedic origin. Okay, physics is coming from Rig Veda. This I told you yesterday, but one thing I have to add here is, Rig Veda has a part Brahmatark. That's a part of Rig Veda, Brahmatark. Now this Brahmatark, Tark means logic, and there's a portion Brahmatark, that portion of Rig Veda, it talks about just physics. Laws of physics, 1, 2, 3, 4, Newton's laws and this laws, everything it talks. And this, on this, so Madhvacharya, he commented on this. Madhvacharya has written a book on this, Brahmatark. It's there in Sanskrit, in Udupi, it's not translated in English. They have not translated into English many books, Madhva, because it's a big project. Sri Vaishnav, they have not translated. If you know Sanskrit, you can read them. But that Sanskrit is difficult. So, I've seen that book, I read that book. It's all talking about modern physics. Any person who knows physics, as soon as he starts reading this, you say, my God, it's physics. It's just there. That is called Brahmatark. And from this book, Madhva deduced, we gave this example of law of conservation of energy, which I showed in Science of Gita. Isn't this verse is talking about law of conservation of energy? I showed you, so I'm not going into details now into this. Okay, astronomy is there in Vedic knowledge. The Surya Siddhant, we know that. Now, astronomy is a part of Jyotish. Jyotish is divided into three parts. One is Siddhant Jyotish, one is Phalit Jyotish, and the other part of Jyotish is dealing with psychology or nature, personality. So this Siddhant Jyotish talking about Siddhant, laws of universe. That's basically astronomy. And Phalit Jyotish is talking about predictions, what we say, you know, Panditji, haath dekho, like that, future, and like that. And the third part is talking about personality. What is your nature? What are you born with, defects or good qualities? There are three parts of astrology. And Siddhant Jyotish is practically, people have no idea, Jyotish has a big part of astronomy. But this is a book, Surya Siddhant, this is also commented by Bhakti Siddhanta. He was a big astrologer, big mathematician, big astronomer. And people who have come to India, they have noted that astronomy was long before what modern astronomy is all about. Okay, and these Einstein and Cunningham archaeologists, they also comment on They also comment on mathematical investigations and all those things. They actually say mathematical science was so perfect and astronomical observations so complete that the path of sun and the moon were accurately measured. Even today we use the same method. What Bhaskaracharya is like 800 years back. He's one of the acharya of astronomy. He's like the founder acharya. Well, not for founder, but one of the main persons in astronomy. And even in Surya Siddhant, they mention the method of parallax to measure the distance between sun and moon. How do you measure? Like, you can't go there. So you have to use the parallax method. That's coming from Vedas. It's simple. It's very simple. And you can use that. And they knew this and they started using this for nearby stars. But then if you want to calculate distance for stars which are very far off, of course those are not stars, those are planets, we understand. But whatever, they twinkle. For that you have to use another method that is called standard candle method. And everybody knows that standard candle method is based on a fake assumption. It is not purely, it is not exactly exact. Because how do you know which star? You see, if you see the sky, every star looks at the same level, you know, isn't it? You can't know the depth. So how do you know which star is away, which star is? You can say, okay, that star is faint and this star is bright, so that star should be away. But it doesn't work like that, because even a close star, even if star is close and that star is away, if you have some clouds, interstellar clouds, gases, it can appear as faint, that can appear as bright. But they assume like that. One of the assumption is, the star which is faint, it should be away, the star which is bright, it should be close. Every scholar, he understands this. Every astronomer, these assumptions are there on the basis of that calculate. Oh, Krishna. From where this is? Okay. You can't do anything with him. Just leave him alone. Is there inside? Oh, really? That's interesting. I don't think so it can. The rats are not so fool, you know. He might have run away. He's inside. Okay. Anyway. Huh? A special rat? Okay. Maybe. To hear scientific seminar. Yeah, maybe get the information. She? It was she. How do we know that? You can understand that. Okay, so yeah, I don't know what I was saying, but it's just gone. Okay, so you see the point, standard candle method, there's a fake assumption. These are assumptions, and that's how we, after getting those assumptions, then we calculate distances. And that is why modern distances are sometimes very wrong, sometimes okay with Vedic calculations, but then there is a problem with that. And very far off stars, everybody understands that there is one of the astronomer I was talking. She's from Harvard and MIT somewhere. She was telling me every astronomer understands 99% astronomy is speculation. It's just speculation, because many of things are assumptions. Like for example, age of universe. How do you know? 13.4 billion years, something, and then it became 14.2 billion years, something. But then there's no evidence for that. The evidence they give is CMB, cosmic microwave background. That's what they say. Some infrared radiations, Hubble, like it scans whole universe. Some leftover infrared radiations from the beginning of creation, when there was a big bang. Then there was leftover radiations, and they take the frequencies. But the idea is there's an assumption there was a big bang. And then they think, and then they calculate. And but now theory is changing. Now they are thinking there's no big bang. How is there a big bang? People are arguing for that. The theories are changing very fast. So how do you have faith in their calculations? You can't have. If you know modern science, you will understand there is a lot of problems there. there are books written, bye-bye to Big Bang. Bye-bye to Big Bang. So if you go in the mathematics, you can simply understand there are problems in that. The fire in Big Bang. There are books written that, and everybody, astronomers know who are in the field. So this is about astronomy. Even chemistry is there. A lot of chemistry is there in Vedic scriptures. This example you might be knowing, isn't it? What's this? You know this? Qutub Minar? Qutub Minar? This is Qutub Minar. And what's that? That's not Qutub Minar. You see this Qutub Minar and behind that pillar? That pillar, this Qutub Minar, and behind that there is an Ashoka pillar. That's an Ashoka pillar. Ashoka at that time, when Ashoka the Great, he was a king, he made this a pillar, and this pillar doesn't rust. What do you do? And this science of making pillar, it is mentioned in Krishna Yajurveda. Scholars know this, but they don't know how to do it. They know the components of this, like it is gold, silver, copper, lead, tin, and iron. But what combinations and how to, but the process of doing, it's lost. We have no idea. So there's one pillar like this here in Delhi, and there's another pillar in Patna. They found by excavation. It doesn't rust. We don't have any technology today by which we can make something which doesn't rust. We don't have that. It's impossible. This shows these people were very advanced in their chemistry science. By the way, you have many books dealing with chemistry, and I've read these books. So Yajnavalkya Smriti is talking about purification of metals. Rasratn Samuchaya. Chemistry in Sanskrit is called as Rasa, Ras Shastra. Rasratn Samuchaya, it's talking about preparation of alloys, of bronze, brass, bell metals, ores of lead. Rasarnavam, it's a very important book, talking about extraction of gold. Distillation processes. If they're talking about process of distillation, they also have, you know, jars and all these pipettes and all this, but they were made of clays and all these things and glasses they had. In fact, Nagarjun is known for his book on chemistry and research on chemistry. And in fact, Nagarjun, so you know Nagarjun, no? he was a Buddhist. He was a founder acharya. He was almost like a founder of Mahayana Buddhism. And he extended his age 800 years. He lived for 800 years. We know that. And because he had invented a compound by his knowledge of chemistry, which would prolong his life. But somehow, something happened. This book, Sharangdhar Samhita, this is talking about pharmaceutical formulas. These books are still available in the market. You can go and read them. Not a big thing. So chemistry is, you see, the modern chemistry and Vedic chemistry, what we call as maranam, it is extraction in modern chemistry. They just took this knowledge from Vedas and they just put the different names, that's all, modern names. Of course you have to do that. Shodhanam is purification, distillation and fractionation. Bandha, that's the word which is for alloys. I'm giving you some examples how Vedic knowledge is talking about all these things. There are Sanskrit terms for them, these things. By the way, yeah, I'll just... There are few more books on chemistry if you want to read. There's something called as Bhava Prakashika Nikantu, which is available. You can read that. There's something called Ras Ratnakar. He was a physician in 15th century, which is written by Nityanand Nath. Why I'm telling you is this, because it's still there. It's all available with us. But there is dust on them. That's all. Nobody comes and reads them. It's just rotting around. Because people have lost faith in all these things. There is biology. This was like interesting to me. There's something called as Parashar Smriti. You know about this Parashar Smriti? It talks about cell biology. And we say modern biology, the most important discovery is a cell, the unit of life. It's talking about cell. Cell has cell membrane, cytoplasm, outer cell wall. And Vedas talked about that. Kala Veshtam is outer cell wall. Sukshma Patrakam is cell membrane. Ras Ashray, cytoplasm, and Anvikshi. There's another term, Anvikshi. You know what's this? Anvikshi. That is genes. Vedas are talking about genes, which anvikshi actually means not seen. If you see a cell by microscope, you can't see genes, you can't see it. But then you have to process, so you have to do electrophoresis and all those things to analyze what's happening there. So that's anvikshi. Ayurveda talks a great details about genes. And so in fact I've written a book on genes, by the way. I didn't bring it here, but and the title is Science Fails to Explain Life. And then I've talked about genetics, and Ayurveda is very advanced in genetics, by the way. Talks about genes. We only understand genes have information. That's our take. But Ayurveda says genes also have time. Because you know, some genes are activated, some genes are deactivated. You know this, no? In the womb. So when to activate, when to deactivate, it has time. And also consciousness is there in those genes. That's why they call genes as anvikshi, not seen, because it is not just some matter there, subtle matter. It is time, consciousness and information, which you cannot see. That's why they prefer to call genes as anvikshi, which is cannot be seen, it can be only be analyzed. It's a very beautiful term there. Okay, and then you have medicine. This is my field anyway. I can keep on talking on this for next 3-4 hours, but I will not do that. This is medicine, and the two main books of medicine, Charak Samhita, and Charak Samhita is talking about medicine, Shushrut Samhita is talking about surgery. And if you see that these books, when I read it, because I have done a modern system of allopathy, when I read them, I was simply astounded how this knowledge is there in these books, which we considered as, like, for us, Ayurveda people are like nonsense. Like physicians, you know, like, they're crazy people, they don't know anything. But then when I read his books, I know it's like surprising, you know, it's like very surprising, because Ayurveda books explain everything. For example, these are the two main books. Oh, you can see here. These are modern surgical instruments. And this is Shushrut, showing surgical instruments. Modern surgical instruments, we have just 190 approximately surgical instruments, like ophthalmology of body. Shushrut gives 250 instruments. Some of the instruments we even don't know. And you see, many of the instruments are same. If you see this, it's there also. Many of these are same. In fact, even today, modern surgery is done on the principles of Shushrut. Even today, appendix operation is as it is mentioned in Shushrut. So rhinoplasty, what we do, plastic surgery of nose, it is as it is from Shushrut. This is Ayurveda also mentions 24 vidyas. 24 systems of medicine. And allopathy, you know allopathy, no? Allopathy? Modern system? It's one of the branch of Ayurveda. That's all. It's coming from Ayurveda. Those people knew these are branches. Homeopathy is called Hetu Vipritkari Vidya in Ayurveda. It's coming from Ayurveda, by the way. So you know who invented homeopathy? This Honeyman? You know Honeyman? Yeah, Honeyman. Yeah. You called Hanuman? Okay. Honeyman, yeah. He invented homeopathy, and he got this idea, you know, homeopathy, and it's there in Vedas. Hetu Vipritkari Vidya. Allopathy is Vyadi Vipritkari Vidya. Vyadi means disease. And allopathy, we just fight with the disease. That's allopathy. There's a disease, you give a medicine, fight it. Allopathy is all about fighting and poison. You poison those bacteria. Homeopathy is dealing with the cause there. Naturopathy is Rituchari Vidya or Panchkarma. From that, naturopathy principles are coming. There are alternate medicines now. So many, acupuncture, acupressure, isn't it? All this magnetotherapy on. It is all mentioned in Ras Tantra Samuchay. That's a Tantra Shastra. We think it's coming from China, but it went from India there. Probably it went with Buddhism, or I don't know how, but I think it should be like that. Okay. In modern medicine, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 branches of medicine. They are all in Vedas. Kaya Chikitsa, Shalya Chikitsa, Shalakyam, Kumar Vrittim, it's pediatrics. So you know, So we have heard about all these rishis, Kashyap Muni, isn't it? And who else, like Parashar Muni, and what's that? Who else? Famous Kardama Muni in Bhagavatam. Now we might be thinking, you know, they are living so long, so what they are doing, you know, whole day. They are so long life, you know. I used to wonder what they are doing, you know, like they are like space out or in trance, or what they are doing whole day. But they were very busy because Kashyap Muni, he has written a book on pediatrics. This pediatrics is called Kumar Vrityam. This book is written by Kashyap Muni. He gave the science of pediatrics. And he also gave the science of dictionary, which I'll show you. They were all these rishis, they had a duty to give knowledge to mankind through Vedas. That's what they were doing. They were not sitting and doing nothing. It was a big challenge. Psychiatry is called Bhut Vidya. This is interesting. Bhut, you know Bhut?
Ghost.
Psychiatry is called Ghost. According to Ayurveda, psychiatric problems are due to subtle entities. We understand that to a certain extent. If you're weak-hearted, subtle entities take over and then you get... So it's not a question of weak-hearted, but if you break principles of religion, subtle entities will take over your body. Mochi, Suchi, all these things. So subtle entities will take over your body and then there will be disturbance in mind and whatever, psychiatric. OBG is called Prasuti Vidya, Forensic Science, Visharg Virodh Vichikitsa, Geriatrics. You know geriatrics? For elderly, old age. This spelling is wrong. This spelling is wrong, by the way. It is called geriatrics. R is missing. This is called as Vajikaranam. You know what, one thing? So many devotees eat that Chavanprash? But it's not going to help you. One thing. You know why? Because Chavanprash is coming from this Vajikaranam, this Shastra. And they say Chavanprash works to make old cells new. It's a rejuvenation process. That is the meaning of Vajikaranam. It doesn't make young cells more strong. It doesn't do that. It is making old cells renew. So it works for old people. And not for young people. It doesn't work that way. So, yeah, people now, but it's propaganda. Chavanprash. And whatever Chavanprash you eat, that's also like, that's not Chavanprash, by the way. That's all, you know what? That's all ghee. You know ghee? Ghee? What's that ghee? That big green color? What's that? Round green color? Loki? It is a vegetable.
Zucchini.
If you go to India and if you see all these companies which have gone Dabur, and all these companies I went and I saw, most of the Chavanprash they are making with zucchini. There's just zucchini there and color, and that's all some sugar. That's it. That's not Chavanprash, by the way. So don't waste your money on that. Even if you have pure thing, it will not help you. For old people, it's good, but then you have to make yourself. So that's medicine all about. Now, so philosophy is there in Upanishads. Philosophy has five branches. If you read any philosophy, that is epistemology, ontology, logic, ethics and morality, and aesthetics. These are basic branches. And epistemology is coming from the branch of Nyaya. Ontology is coming from Sankhya. Logic is coming from Tarka. Is there? Okay, logic is coming from Tarka. Ethics and morality is coming from Dharma Shastras. And aesthetics is coming from Rasa Shastra. It's all there. Philosophy, all branches of philosophy are mentioned in Vedic scriptures. And then you have psychology. You know this person?
Yeah.
Prabhupada used to call fraud. Prabhupada used to call him. Anyway. Freud talked about consciousness, subconsciousness, super id, Oedipus complex. That's a crazy complex. You know Oedipus complex. You know, if you know. Now psychologists no more believe in that. They say it was like Freud was something out of his mind when he proposed Oedipus complex. If you know what I'm talking about, Oedipus complex, you can read, is wrong. But Taittiriya Upanishad talks about subconscious mind. It talks about all these koshas. You know this koshas? Annamaya kosh, pranamaya kosh, manomaya kosh, vijnanamaya kosh, ananmaya kosh. Prabhupada mentions in Bhagavad Gita. There are different levels of, different layers of mind on a soul. And so anamaya kosh and pranamaya kosh, that is basically conscious mind. Manomaya kosh, vijnanamaya kosh, ananmaya kosh, that's subconscious mind. So our Vedas, Taittiriya Upanishad talks about that. By the way, modern psychology is really pathetic. By the way, psychology began in 1870s by William James. You know this, no? He started that, and then Wilhelm Wundt, he was there. And psychology, by the way, it is coming from a Croatian term. You know, Croatia is here. And that means soul. Psyche means soul. It was a science of soul. But then this Watson and V.F. Skinner, they came afterwards, and they said, well, you can't see soul, so let us analyze mind. And psychology became science of mind. But then they said, we can't even see mind, so okay, let us reduce to behavior. So there was born behaviorism in psychology, and they were just analyzing behavior. And then afterwards, and now recently, some people came and they did some research, and they came up with gestalt psychology. You know this gestalt psychology? Gestalt psychology. And they said, well, it's not easy, you know, there has to be a mind. Gestalt, you say gestalt? Okay. Gestalt, yeah. So they said, well, it's not simple, it's not. There has to be a consciousness, there has to be a mind there component. And mind was again introduced. You see, mind went off, soul went off, behavior, now mind is again introduced. And now again they are having some troubles there, and it's like pathetic. Now modern practice of psychology is mostly it's psychiatry, it's medicines. Most of it, in practice if you go. In theory it's very different. In practice you give medicines, and mostly it's medicines of, you make the patient sleep. Okay, fine, problem is solved. Most of it. I don't say everything of it, because there are some medicines which can help you. Lithium and all these compounds, they are good. Most of it, you can't handle things, you know, what do you do with them? So that's psychology. In fact, the greatest rate of suicide is among psychologists. Because they are dealing with so much problems, they themselves became affected, you know, by that. And I have my teacher, psychologist in my college, another Ames also I saw. They were like super messed up because they're dealing with all this tamoguna stuff, you know. Depression, this and that, they get affected a lot by that. But is there in Vedas? Is there in Vedas? For us, it's very simple. Every mental disease is born of, I told in Science of Bhavita, tamogun. You just change the lifestyle and bring it to mode of goodness, and half of the problems are solved, psychiatric problems. Half of it is gone. And I've personally practiced that, and I've treated patients. I'm not just talking theory, because I was a doctor, so I know it works. Dictionary and language. Okay, what is this? Oxford Dictionary. How many pages Oxford Dictionary has? Maybe thick one? 3,000 maybe something? 3,000. Thick one you get? Thick one. No, not abridged version. Big one. But then you have a Vedic. This concept of dictionary is coming from Vedas. You have two types of dictionaries. One gives the meaning, and one gives synonyms. You know this, no? The synonym dictionary is called as thesaurus, and the meaning dictionary is proper meaning dictionary. These both concepts are coming from Vedas, and the Vedic dictionary is called as Nirukt. Nirukt and Nighantu. And this was given to us by Kashyap Muni. This concept of dictionary. This is a dictionary. I took the photo. Nighantu and Nirukt. And you know how many pages it has? Oxford Dictionary has 3,000. It has 32 pages. That's all. That's all. And you can analyze entire Vedic knowledge. That is a Vedic knowledge. It's concise. It's coming from God. No human is able to make a dictionary 32 pages which can encompass everything. It's impossible. I read this and I was like, what's happening? You know. So that is called Nighantu and Nirukt. There are other dictionaries that we use now. So sometimes scholars use Amar Kosh, which actually Prabhupada was using. And then there is something called as Medini dictionary, which our acharyas were using. And then something called as Gangadhari dictionary, which actually Jiva Goswami was using that dictionary. So all these dictionaries have Vedic origin. It's not a new concept, you have a dictionary and it's coming from Western world, no. It's nothing like that. Okay, the science of language is coming from Vedas. The science of language has three things: rhetorics, syntax and lexicon. That's language, basically divided into three portions. From Vedic you have Alankar, which is basically rhetorics. Rhetorics you mean? Rhetorics, you know, ornamentation. Language ornamentation, like various techniques to make your language effective. And in Greeks, they used to call such people as sophists. You know this? Sophist. From that word is coming sophisticated. People who is like, people who talk, you know, very impressive. Yes, a sophisticated man. People who talk loose, we don't call them sophisticated. So, Alankar Shas, rhetoric is coming. Karaka, syntax and diction is coming. I hope you know this, syntax, diction. From Dhatu Kosh, dictionary, word origin lexicon, that's dictionary. That's coming there. Okay, computers. What about computers? Computers, you know this person? He is Noam Chomsky. Yeah, Chomsky, yeah. Chomsky. He's known in world of computers and linguistics, computer language. He said, it is said about him, this is Ashtadhyayi Panini, this is the Sanskrit grammar book, Panini, everybody knows, is the main book of Sanskrit grammar. This grammar begins with six kind of sutras: Samagya, Paribhash, Vidhi, Niyam, Adesh and Adhikar. I'll explain what this, but about in Wikipedia it said, and he also admitted, he has always acknowledged his debt to Panini for his modern notion of explicative generative grammar. Explicative generative grammar means grammar of computers. He got this science from Sanskrit language. He got this idea. I'll show you how. If you know computers, this is, you know this, no? In computers, they talk about production rules, start symbols and empty strings. Anyway, that's computer language. So, in Sanskrit, that Adesh and Samyak Sutra are production rules. Paribhasha Sutra start symbols. And Lopa is empty strings. Anybody who knows computers, this is the core of computer language. And that's all mentioned in Sanskrit. One of my friend who was doing research into this, he's a computer scientist, he read Panini grammar. Whole night he was reading. He came in the morning and he said, my God, this is computer science. What's happening? The same rules. And then we did research and then we went to Chomsky and all these people, and we found Chomsky himself is saying, yeah, I give a debt to Panini grammar. And that's computer science. The origin is in our Vedic scriptures. At least the details of it. Okay, what about architecture? You know this? Vastu Shastra? You know this? And there is something called as Shilpi Shastra. Vastu Shastra is dealing with making houses and buildings. Shilpi Shastra is dealing with making statues. That's now this science is coming from Sthapatyaved, which was actually given by Mahamuni Mayan. He actually extracted from that this Vastu Shastra. And it is said in Vastu Shastra, if you read any book for Krishna temples, you don't need Vastu Shastra. It is said there beginning. You don't need, and every Vastu Shastra person knows that you don't need it. For Krishna temple, you don't need Vastu Shastra. Because wherever there is Krishna, everything is auspicious. It's said like that. But, having said that, one thing is there, modern architecture and Vastu Shastra are very different. Modern architecture is just, they are considered about beauty and strength. Tensile strength of the building, materials and the beauty. But Vastu Shastra is also focusing on how much sunlight should enter the building. Because we know the importance of sunlight. How much air ventilation should be there. But modern people don't want this because they have ACs, you know. They don't care about that air ventilation. How much mental satisfaction should be there when you sit in that space. Because space affects your mental satisfaction, you know. If you sit in a very small room, you will get frustrated after some time. or maybe an ugly room. In fact, at the time of Greeks, they had a system of torture. And how you used to torture is, your buildings, roofs they used to make like this. So the person, like, there's a different kind of space, you know, he used to go mad living there. Walls are different and these are different. So mental satisfaction and Vastu Shastra is also concerned with auspiciousness. So you have to make a building in such a way so that it is auspicious. So that's not there in modern architecture. So that's why Vastu Shastra is also important for constructing temples. But in that sense, in the sense of sunlight, air, mental satisfaction, creating a space. But yeah, ideally you don't need, but practically you need it because people are living there, isn't it? So that's the role of Vastu Shastra there. Okay, what about politics and MBA? It's a whole science coming from Chanakya Niti. You know that. By the way, we know Chanakya Niti, but there are three more Niti Shastra. If you want to understand Chanakya, you can't understand Chanakya so easily. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't know how to apply, you know, because he was the minister of a king who ruled India, Ashoka. His sutras are applicable. So for that, more easy is Vidur Niti. It's not known much, but he was as a politician. Actually, in Mahabharata it is said, there was no greater politician than Vidur. And there will be no greater politician than him. And then you have Shukracharya Niti. Shukracharya is the guru of demons. But he has good advices for us. And then you have a Niti by Brahmaji. And that is called as Kamandakya Niti. So, that's not translated into English, that's in Sanskrit. But Shukracharya Vidur Niti, that's probably you find in English somewhere. Okay, the difference between modern politics and MBA and Vedic politics and MBA is this. Modern politics MBA, they teach power over people. But Vedic politics MBA, they say power over mind. And that's a key difference. Every king was taught to control his senses. There is no king without controlling senses. That's the first education given to him. Because if you can't control yourself, how do you control people? How do you do that? Then you end up exploiting them and killing them and taxing them, isn't it? Well, it's out of your control. So that's very important point, power over mind. And that is why even politics and MBA could lead you back to God, because it's a stepping stone. If you have control on your mind, then you can go forward to understand spirituality. That's why all Vedic knowledges, they were helping us to get into spirituality. They were not opposed to spirituality, isn't it? That's why Prabhupada says in his Upanishads, paravidya and aparavidya. You know this, no? Paravidya is spiritual science, aparavidya is material science. And material science was supporting spiritual science. That's how society was moving. That is all varnashrama and bhakti. And this is how they used to do. But modern system is diametrically opposed to spiritual science. Okay, law, science of law is coming from Manu Samhita. It's simple. So I don't have to explain this. And so there are many other Dharma Shastra. Law is called Dharma Shastra. So there is Gautam Smriti, Apasambha Smriti, Badhayan Smriti, Vishwamitra Smriti. There are 32 present Dharma Shastras with us, excluding Manu Samhita. We have that now, and there are you can read them if you get access Sanskrit. They are in Sanskrit, but it is there. Dharma Shastra is dealing with criminal law, ethics, and punishment. That's all coming from Vedic scriptures. Law means achar, vyavahar, and prayaschit, and this is what law is all about. Okay, you have defense. You know, Viman Shastra. I'll go. Now, of course, this Shastra is there, but we don't have any idea how to use it. We have no idea. Actually, these people were using these photographs you might have seen on net. But it is interesting because this photograph is showing propellers and everything there, isn't it? This is from Viman Shastras. People are doing research, and they were using mercury as a fuel. By the way, we use petrol. And Viman Shastras mention, if you use mercury as a petrol, you can create anti-gravity. But how to do that, we don't know. In modern day, mercury is not used, isn't it? Much. We don't know the science. Mercury is semen of Lord Shiva. You know this? Yeah, is there, is a semen of Lord Shiva. When Shiva was running behind Mohini, he lost semen and that fell on the earth, it became mercury. And sulfur is the it's a menstrual fluid of Parvati. So if you combine sulfur and mercury, you can create anti-gravity. You can create miracles. We don't know. We have how to do that. We have no idea. But that's locked in Vedic scriptures in the Mansha. Somebody has to come and decode it. Okay, this was a big demon, Tripurasur. He used to become invisible. In Bhagavatam it comes. Invisible and this, and Shiva fought with him. This was his plane, and this was having capability of becoming invisible. That Tripura Viman with mercury and sulfur as a fuel, something. And this is all Vimanic Shastras and all these things. Okay, agriculture. Parashar Muni gave us agriculture. I was telling all these rishis are doing something, you know. He gave us a science of agriculture. This book is still there in Asiatic Society. Asiatic Society, you know, it's in Calcutta. They have big books. We went there to have, but they don't allow, you know. They don't allow to take photographs and this. And we took photograph, then they shouted at us. They took our camera. No, this. We told you books are rotting around. Somebody is there, but they are crazy. But somehow we got this. And this book is talking about modern techniques of agriculture also. It's talking about seeds preservation of seeds. You have to preserve seeds. It's talking about watering procedures. It's talking about weeds. It's talking about various seasons, how to grow. It's talking about forecast. How can you forecast rains by crude and method, suitability of animal land, care of animals, everything is talking about. It's so precise. You have civil engineering and architecture. You see this? This is a building. That's a building, by the way. It's a form of yajna and building. They could create buildings like that. Now, to make a building like that, you need a mathematics. You know, you can't make a building like that. Just, you need to have a strong mathematics. And they were also making yajnashalas. So this is a diagram from astrological book. They were doing calculations like that. Squares and circles, how to put area of circle within a square. How to put circle, the area of a triangle within a square. You need a big mathematics for that. This is a research of, this is a mathematician who did research on this, on Sulva Sutras, by the way. And now the most important thing, entertainment. Otherwise it's boring. Entertainment is there in our Vedic scriptures. This is from Natyashastra, Bharat Muni, and also Kavya Prakash Deepika. These two books are very interesting, I read them. And entertainment is, by the way, coming from Lord Shiva. Shiva gave to his bull, Nandi. And then Nandi passed it to Bharat Muni. And then Bharat Muni gave us. So Natyashastra is talking about music, classical Indian dance, literature, stage design. You have to design a stage, isn't it? And then makeup of the actors. How do you make up? How do you do makeup? All these things Bharat Muni is talking about. And then poetry. And this is about Natyashastra. Filmology, I was telling. This concept, it's coming from Natyashastra. There is some research and this, okay, this is a good thing. Natyashastra, like that. This is about entertainment. This is, you see, this is the modern notation of music, isn't it? They give notation like that. This is modern notation, just zoom in. There are some bar lines, time signature, notes and key signatures. This is the Sanskrit notation. It's almost the same, you see. You have bars there, and then you have that lines up going and low going. It's almost the same. If you match, it's almost the same system. But of course there are Sanskrit words there. But the science of writing music, that's coming from Vedas. That's what I want you to impress. How do you write music? That's a big surprise, you know. Like, I'm playing music and you write it. No human can think about it, isn't it? If I tell you write music, okay, from where do you start? What do you do with that? you can't just invent this science by that. It is given by God. It's coming from Vedic system. The science of writing music. If you think about it, we take it very obviously. It's an obvious fact, but it's not obvious if you think how it came. We don't understand. We even don't understand how language comes in human society. It's a speculation. Genes or this or that. How suddenly people started speaking. It can't just come by evolution. Because you have syntax and semantics, you know, how do you create meanings of the words and then start communicating. So 64 colors, and I'm going to finish. Music has five things. If anybody knows music, this is talking about notes, pitch, scales, tempo, beat, and arpeggio means annotations of voice. So it's all coming from Vedas. Talk about sur, aro, avre, rag, lay, and tal. That's the modern Western system, what they have in music. Anybody knows music here? Okay, fine. Mm-hmm. Okay. What's the most important thing in music? Let me just ask you as a quiz just. Is it beats? Is it scales? Is it notes? Is it tempo? Is it sound variation? Listening? No, among this? Beat, okay. And? Scales and? No, one. The most important is tempo. Tempo means the rate which you are playing. If you ask any musician, the rate, it's not beat. You can play a very simple beat, but if you mess up with the tempo, your music is gone. So tempo is very slow, fast, then stop. Then again, ding, 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 you see like that, something on guitar, if you play like that. So it goes like that, tempo. Anyways, it's just 64 colors are there in Vedic knowledge. I told about this. I was surprised when I found this Shekhar Kriya, beauty parlor. It's there in Vedic scriptures, beauty parlor and all these things. Fashion designing, nepathyam, carpentry, tattooing, child care. This is so many people praising our Vedic scriptures from scholars, from professors, from philosophers to politicians. You can see all of them. Professor Dusen, Alfred North Whitehead. You know him? Alfred North Whitehead? You should know him at least, you know. If you don't know him, what you're doing? He's a if you go to UK